Katie, and you're listening to the Home Ed Voices podcast, where I talk to people about their home education adventures and experiences here in the UK. This is episode number 10, and this week I'm talking to Leah Bowden from Modern Miss Mason. We talk about her work encouraging home educating and homeschooling parents to adapt the ideas of Charlotte Mason for the modern era we live in today. We talk about how living in the UK means that we get to live among living history, and we discuss the importance of prioritising home education and balancing our other projects alongside it. But before we start, here is the episode's sponsor. Calling all crafters. With Christmas fast approaching, it's time to think about making things for our loved ones or finding a special something for the knitter or crocheter in your life. If you fancy the double whammy of finding beautiful British hand-dyed wool and supporting this podcast at the same time, then check out Oxford Kitchen Yarns at oxfordkitchenyarns.com. As Oxford Kitchen Yarns, I've been hand-dyeing British wool since 2007, and as Home Ed Voices podcast listeners, you can get 15% off your order by using the discount code HOMEEDVOICES at checkout. Know that you are supporting British sheep farmers and wool mills, as well as my home educating family. And now, on with the episode. This week on the podcast, I got Leah Bowden from Modern Miss Mason. Hello, thank you for coming.
Hello, it's so great to be on here. Love that you're doing this for our UK girls.
Good. We needed the UK to represent.
I know, and you did it. Well done, you.
Somebody had to, and Muggins decided to give it a go.
Well done.
Right, tell me a bit about your family.
Okay, so I'm married to Dave. We have been married nearly 18 years, which is crazy. We've got four children, two boys, two girls. The eldest is a girl. She's nearly 16. Next one is a boy. He's 14. Next one's a boy. He's 10. And my youngest is a girl, and she is 7. And we have a dog, if that interests people as well.
What kind of dog?
He is a rescue dog. He's half Labrador, half Basset Hound. So he looks like a Labrador, a black lab without legs, with very small legs. And he mostly gets laughed at when he's seen in public. So,
oh, that's adorable.
He is adorable. He's perfect for us. But yeah, if we take him anywhere other than our local park, people always stop us and ask us, what is he? So, fits us perfectly. A little bit rogue.
Right. How did you start home educating?
Okay, well, we are in our 11th year of home educating. Yeah. After graduating from university, I lived in the States for a year. And that's when I first, so this would have been, I'm going to show my age now, probably late 90s. I first discovered homeschooling, which is more or less what they call it over there. And I met families who were homeschooling. I was introduced to this kind of support center where they did drama and art and things that you might not necessarily do at home, but it was there created to support home educators. And I had a little bit of involvement with it. And I was blown away by really the quality of family life from what I could see. I know once you're in it, it's slightly different. But I was just struck by being able to interact with these kids on a different level than I'd seen before. They were just kind of conversational and interesting. And I just was like, and I think really a little seed was sown then, a little idea of, I wonder if this is possible in the UK. Well, I wasn't even with Dave. So came back from the States, move the story along. Dave and I get married, have our first daughter. And it didn't really come into our minds again, didn't come into conversation until we had enrolled her in the local primary school and to the preschool, to the nursery. So we'd enrolled her into the nursery. So she was in a little red uniform with a little book bag, and I was walking her down the road for her first day at nursery. And I suddenly paused, I stopped in my tracks and thought, I didn't want to do this. What am I doing? And, quite dramatic, but actually that day really kind of triggered a conversation between Dave and I. It took us 2 years. So she did the whole of nursery and the whole of reception year, where I would have done it there and then, but I didn't want to feel alone in it. And Dave and I very much shoulder to shoulder in this stuff anyway. He's so supportive and amazing. But it took him a while because he'd not done the journey in his head like I had. He'd not seen what I'd seen. So it took, I mean, we have got some funny stories. If you ask him about it, it's hilarious, because we used to email each other. He'd be at work and I'd be emailing him these articles like 50 reasons why you should homeschool. And he would send it back to me with like the counter argument, and then he'd get stuck halfway and he didn't have any more counter arguments. And one of the things he said very early on, he said, I went to school, I did all the normal thing and I turned out okay. And I said, I don't just want our kids to turn out okay. And he was like, oh yeah, we could probably do better, couldn't we? So it was really interesting, the process of him and I getting on the same page. And some of that was frustrating and hard, and I'm sure many other people can relate to that. Yeah. But some of it was needed for me to be able to. And in those 2 years, whilst we were researching, we knew two other families in the UK. It's so different now, but we knew two other families. We went and saw them, hung out with them, asked them a billion questions. I was reading every book I could get my hands on. And then, so I was pregnant with my third son. He was born in the July. By the September, we began our official kind of homeschooling journey, and I'd got three children by then. So, and we haven't looked back since. So that was 11 years ago. Yeah. Wow.
So when did you find Charlotte Mason?
Really early on, in that whole madly reading everything stage. Yeah. I kind of was Googling just general homeschooling, and she generally pops up as one of the pedagogies or forms of, you know, ways of going and kind of a road to go down with homeschooling. Yeah. And I'd looked at other stuff, and you know, I was the kind of home birthing cloth nappy kind of mama, you can imagine. I was doing all that, and it just, I mean, I wasn't homeschooled, but I was raised, my mother is just like just this amazing free-spirited lady who would always point things out in nature to us. We'd always be encouraged to listen to classical music. That was kind of in our DNA, even though it wasn't taught. So I think I had something in me from childhood that instantly related to the philosophy and the kind of the methods that came from that, and just loved it and didn't really budge much further than that. So I started to read. I found, and I'll tell you who most people might know of her, but my friend Lynn Seddon, who is quite widely known now, she writes the Exploring Nature with Children curriculum. Yes. Yeah. She and I contacted her 12 years ago, because I thought, oh, I think she's in the UK. And this is the thing, back then, there just wasn't anybody around. Yeah. And she, my first connection with somebody, and she'd only just started homeschooling, similar time to me. She was the only person I could find in the UK who was using the Charlotte Mason philosophy and methodology. So she and I started talking, and we're good friends today, which is amazing. So yeah, and that has really just began to read as much as I could. But a lot of the stuff was American, and it still is. A lot of the stuff is American still, because, you know, you've got your second, third generation home educators over there, whereas really we're pioneering. I mean, I know one or two who are second generation here, but we really are the pioneers of, you know, home education in the UK. We're the ones who are forging the way, becoming a voice and staying the course. And that's not easy.
Well, so I think it's also, you know, like it's this generation. And yeah, as you say, like the sort of, you know, the people slightly before who are starting to do things like build curriculums, like build Charlotte Mason curriculums that are actually using British books.
That's right. That's right. And even, I mean, that's kind of, I have a large online UK community of Charlotte Mason educators. I mean, there's over 1,000 people on there. We started with 12 people about four years ago. And they kind of find each other, which is incredible. And it's a real privilege to be a part of that. And even between that group there, and, you know, you say 1,000 people actively, it's probably 100.
Yeah.
You are regularly, you know, it's like these great groups. But between us, we're trying to even compile our own lists of British living books that can be used here. And it's taking ages because we're all kind of using them and then testing them out and then putting them up on the page. And that could take a whole generation, really, of really forming, unless somebody's got a ton of time on their hands, which who does when you're homeschooling?
Yeah.
we're all trying to do our own projects in the fringe hours, aren't we? But yeah, so I think it's amazing. We've come a long way, and as a, you know, forming that part of our home ed identity in this country of, hey, Charlotte was English, we kind of feel like we're taking her back.
Well, this is the thing, you know, this is, yeah, just, yeah, this is a British pedagogy. I can't say
pedagogy, absolutely.
Yeah. And
that's right,
you know, and like, it's totally, obviously it's completely fine, the Americans are using it and they've built all this amazing stuff, but yeah, I can see,
yeah,
you know, it's not even trying to reclaim, it's just trying to be like, okay, that's great, but you know, like, when you find these, you know, you can find these giant lists, as you well know, of living books, or even, yeah, you know, like where people have like reissued books and things like that, yeah, and you just then, as Brits, you end up just picking through, going, well, none of the history stuff is useful to me, because even the world history is,
yeah,
you know, American authors and on an American bent kind of thing.
Yeah, and some of the books that you, if you kind of research the PNEU timetable, so you know, you're looking. I mean, some of that is very much going back into the Victorian times, but there's some. I've got a friend of mine who's actually busy researching the 1970s PNEU timetables and book lists, and she's doing some of that stuff. She will publish eventually. She's doing an amazing job, and that is very much. I mean, it just reminds me of the stuff that I was born in 75, so
yeah.
I guess my childhood of some of the books and the things that she's coming out with, and that's a little bit more usable. But you know, nobody wants to reproduce a Victorian homeschool. I mean, a Victorian school. In their 21st century home. So even, you know, I love old books, but actually I want to be introducing my children to, yes, obviously within the historical context, but stuff that is going to bring everything to life. And some of those books, and you can't even find them. You can find catalogues online and you might be able to read them in archives, but that's not helpful for my 10-year-old who wants to curl up on the sofa with a book, you know.
Yeah.
So there are lots of people around the UK and around the world who are busy trying to make this more usable, trying to make it easier to find books. And it's great. I mean, it's a great time to be doing it because we're all sort of shaping it together, really, what it looks like today, which is quite different from some of the stuff you can find online, how other people are using it. I think I think there are, because of the history of homeschooling in America, they have lots of usable curriculums and workbooks and set lists and this kind of stuff, which was, you know, when homeschooling first kind of was coming into, I say fashion, it's not really fashionable, but becoming more popular, you know, they were wanting to buy. You've got people like Sunlight saying, hey, we can produce something that is a box, you open it and you just teach from it. And they actually will say, I think they do state that much of their, how they approach their curriculum is from a Charlotte Mason philosophy. I don't know too much about Sunlight, so I can't really speak for that really, but there's stuff like Ambleside Online, there's the Alvary, I've met a lot of people who run these and they're amazing people doing a great job. But what they offer to the world is wonderful lists and kind of ways to go about if you want to follow that in a certain way. But what I'm finding, the more I speak to home educators here in the UK, especially those interested in the Charlotte Mason philosophy, they want to find their own way with it. They're kind of wanting it to fit with their own family. And how does that look for my, you know, my autistic daughter? Or how does that look for my son who is interested in Minecraft and skateboarding? Yeah. Or, you know, because otherwise it feels like you're fighting against this archaic system that just doesn't work. So you'll get a mother who is, you know, blissfully interested in nature study and poetry, trying to bash their kids over the head with it. Where my, you know, growingly, really, my approach is we can do it all. It all works because it's our children and it's this generation that we're raising. And we've got Charlotte Mason's first principle was children are born persons, which means, yes, they are born with everything within them to offer to the world. We get to lay out a feast in front of them and then see how they respond to it. But that also means they have a voice and we have to listen to them. We have to, you know, see how does each child respond to what we're giving them. And I from my experience in the past 10, 11 years of implementing some of this methodology into our home, it hasn't looked the same for each child. So I've never been able to fit a list or a curriculum or a set way of doing things in front of my family. I've had to approach it very differently. And that's really where Modern Miss Mason stemmed from. It was kind of, I mean, I didn't even give it that name. The people who were sort of starting to listen to me said, you should, you know, this is what's going on here. You're bringing it into the 21st century. I don't know if I am, but what I am doing is saying you can find your freedom within this philosophy. You know, and nobody should be having a freak out or burning out or feeling like a failure just because their 6-year-old won't listen to Beethoven. You know, yeah, I mean, totally. And people do. People get upset and frustrated. They think it, they'll email me saying it's not working or I don't know how to do this or they won't narrate or, and actually what the Charlotte Mason philosophy is a beautifully well-rounded and very wide and flexible child approach to childhood and to education. And I think, unfortunately, it has been seen in a very finite way, and I'm trying to widen that. It's kind of part of my, what I'm trying to do is saying, hey, it's much bigger, it's much wider, and anybody can come to it. That was my soapbox. You can see it.
Well, I think it's so important because I think, you know, even through social media, there is so much kind of, look, you know, like people always show their highlight reel, which is completely understandable. Yeah. This is the stuff that we end up being proud of. But it's really, I think it's really easy for people to look at that and go, oh, okay, so it's about, you know, like, yeah, how do I get my kid who plays Minecraft to, you know, like, should they not do that? Should they just be doing, you know, art appreciation or whatever? Like, what counts? And it's like, well, actually, all of it counts.
All of it counts.
But, yeah, I think people narrow it down so much to, like, these are the things that are the ticky boxes, and these are the things that we should be, that you're sort of trying to hide under the rug. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
The kind of real life you exist in 2018 kind of stuff.
Yeah, I know.
It gets kind of shoved aside for the kind of, look, we made these beautiful sketchbooks, and it's like, it all counts.
And I, you know, we all approach parenting and homeschooling and life in such a different way. But I don't think there is a tick box to childhood. I don't think there is a tick box to educating our children. And therefore, we, you know, they're all wonderful and individual. And our responsibility is to facilitate their atmosphere, to be able to bring the right things to the table, to bring them life and for them to enjoy their education, to be able to learn at their own pace and, you know, to connect with the world around them. And it is doable. It really is. It's, you know, every day is different. Not every day is easy. My morning hasn't been great, but it's okay because this is working with growing human beings and we all have those days, don't we? But I think it is, we have to have a much wider approach to these kind of philosophies. We have to think of it from, you know, each child is an individual and they're brilliant and amazing and they will all see the world in a different way. So let's give them variety. And I think that's really important.
Yeah, that totally makes
sense. Yeah.
So what do you love about home education?
Oh, everything. What don't I love? It's interesting because I honestly can say that I love it more today than I ever have. I haven't. I think I find it really important to keep it fresh, to make sure that I'm learning so that I can bring the good stuff to my kids, not only in what I offer them, but in myself as well. Yeah. And I think with home education, I think if you find your freedom as a mother, or maybe there's some fathers listening as well, as a home educator, if you find your freedom and you find, you know, you're happy with yourself in that sense, you kind of find that settling, like, I can do this, confidence is really important, then it's such a freeing and liberating way of life. I think it's just brilliant. Yes, you've still got to do all the laundry and pay the bills and do all the hard stuff. Of course you do. But there's something about, in our experience, the rhythm of the day, which is so lovely. And it's not just kind of the, you know, what do you do at 10 o'clock and when do you get all your books out and how much math do you do? But it's about the flexibility of just okay, the sun's shining, let's go out for a walk, let's take our lunch out. And then your 8-year-old finds a cool seed on the floor, and then that becomes your nature study. Or, you know, and I think I love the questions they ask and learning to take those questions and make them into learning opportunities. I love that it just opens up their world, that it makes the world a bigger place for them, whether it's through a story or through an actual visit. I mean, the cool thing of homeschooling here in the UK, and I'm assuming you'll have listeners from all over the place, but the amazing thing about homeschooling here is that we can just go to a castle, and we can just go to a stately home, or we can just visit. I mean, you know, my children and I this morning, my younger children, we've been... we were learning about the Fosse Way, the Roman roads and all that kind of stuff. And I said, and we're going to go, you know, in a couple of weeks. The Fosse Way is really close to where we live. So we'll go and see, we'll go and walk on it. And they were like, so cool, like we can just do that. And I never want to take that for granted, that we get to live amongst living history. And, you know, that's a real privilege, because I know people homeschooling around the world would love to be able to just visit, you know, a castle so I love that. I love who I've met through it, actually, you know, in real life and through social media, using it in the right way. I've met some of the most incredible people. I think that word tribe is like this sense of finding like-minded people. And, you know, I think we go through life with a mixture of people, but there's something really comforting about being around people who are raising their kids in a similar way and introducing, you know, similar things to their children, you know, just other people who like books or walking or whatever it is something quite magical about connecting with other mums, with other children, with other families that have done a similar journey. And that's really powerful. And that's been a really amazing part of my journey, which has actually opened up doors for me, you know, all over the place. Which is a real privilege. I don't take any of that for granted at all. Yeah, does that answer your question?
Yeah, it does.
I could go on forever, actually, about what I love about it. But
I think the thing is, it's like as you get into it, as you say, like it's an easy thing to love.
It is.
Because you're already going in with the mindset that, like, these are my people and I want to hang out with them and I want to, you know, like it's about wanting to see them grow as people.
Absolutely.
And being right on the front line of that.
Yeah.
And that's what you get to do. So like, you do. You know.
It's a real privilege. And I think that's what we have to come round to. I know it's tiring and there are sacrifices to homeschooling, and we can get through times of the year when our kids just don't want to do anything and we just like, okay, I'm done. And I think it's just learning to press pause, learning to take a breather and not think you're rubbish at it or you need to pack it all in. And I think that's healthy, is that it's not always perfect and Instagram worthy, but that's okay as well. You know, we've chosen a way of life and sometimes you just have to take a day off or a week off. Start again. Yeah.
And you have to trust yourself. I mean, I think that's the big thing, is that you actually have to kind of, everybody second guesses themselves at times.
Yeah,
everybody wobbles. But like when you do this, you have to, like, you have to come out of that. Do you know what I mean? Like, you have to learn how to go, okay, I'm having a wobble, but like, what can I do that's going to make me feel better? Because I have to keep moving forward. This is what I'm doing. This is the vocation, in a way, that I've chosen.
Absolutely.
And so it asks, it's not even the day-to-day stuff. It's like, it asks so much of you, like in your bravery. Do you know what I mean? To actually do it.
Yes, it does. Yeah. And I do a little bit of mentoring now, started this summer, but one of the first questions I ask people is, tell me what you're doing well. And it totally throws them because
they came to bone at you.
Yeah. Like, hang on, what? But everyone's doing something well. And no matter what state they come to that phone call in, that's the first thing I'll say is, tell me what you're doing well. And they, you know, after a little while, they start to list these things and they immediately start to realize, oh, okay, yeah, I can do some of these things. These are elements that I know have been fruitful and know have been good. And I think that's one of the things that I often say to people if you've had a rough day and you feel like you've got nothing done, just sit with a scrap of paper and just write down the learning opportunities that your kids have had that day, whether it's they've learned hostage negotiation or, you know, they've learned how to clear up milk off the floor for the third time or, you know, whatever it is.
Life
or,
skills.
Absolutely. And write down, you know, what you did well that day. And I think we have to offer encouragement to ourselves if we don't get it anywhere else. Yeah. It's just a good habit to kind of get to the end of the day, especially if it's been a hard one, and just, I know that some parts of this day somebody has learned something, especially yourself. And some of those things are just little habits that you learn over the years, because otherwise you just get knocked quite easily. And confidence is a big thing in homeschooling, definitely.
Yeah. This reminds me of the thing that Julie Bogart was doing recently when she was talking about people planning, like planning ahead, but also planning from behind. And she did a poll, and there were actually, well, you know, for the poll that she took, there were far more people who sort of planned from behind and who were documenting. Yeah. Saying, you know, then, and I think some people do, I think most people probably do a bit of both. They have this idea of what they're planning to do and what they kind of want to do in, you know, over that term or those next 6 weeks or whatever. But yeah, I think that the documenting like what you actually did and all the little rabbit trails you followed off, because you don't want to ignore them. There's some of the best stuff is in those rabbit trails.
Absolutely. I think, yeah, and I just think back over just this morning, you know, some of the questions that have come, some of the conversations that we've had, some of the things we've had to negotiate, you know, just kind of, there are constant learning opportunities. And I definitely do both. I try and plan ahead, and I also plan from behind. And I also like to record, you know, what was great, what have we done, what has been helpful, what were some of the questions that have come that have been good. And I think, yeah, Julie's got some great stuff to say about that. I think I really appreciate her input. She's fab.
She is fab. What is the hardest part, or what has been the hardest part?
I think probably for us personally, our life is pretty full outside of homeschooling. So my husband both of us pastor a church, so that's a really big job as well.
Yeah.
He also has another job. and we have just this year, our two eldest children are doing GCSEs at a local academy. So for the first time in 10 years, we've actually got two kids. We are actually got our feet in both camps.
Yeah.
And that's been really hard, because I'm having to like fill in forms and iron shirts. And, you know, I'm like, yeah, I have never done this before. But they both opted to do their GCSEs at this small academy in the city. So we were like, okay. So some of the hardest stuff for us isn't so much the home educating itself, it's the juggling everything else. And it's the kind of the bigger picture of life, which can be very, I say distracting in the nicest way, because obviously those things are, they're real things. They're not a distraction. You know, pastoring a church is not a distraction. It's part of our life. But in the day when anybody else would say, you know, this is my job, so say if it was like 9 to 3, if we were talking about a normal school day,
yeah,
people still phone me and try and get in touch or trying to arrange, you know. And I'm having to, it took a few years in the early years to kind of get people to understand, this is what I do in the day, this is my work.
Yeah.
But also from my mind to not get distracted. So I'm have to learn, if I wake up in the morning with a million things on my mind that are nothing to do with homeschooling, I have to write all those down, put them to the side and focus on my children. And there are also times when I have to say to the kids, you know what, I've got, mummy's got to sit on the computer for an hour just to get a few things done, because then it's out of my mind. So I think some of the hardest stuff for us is managing, you know, the bigger picture, managing life, even stuff like keeping the house in order and cooking meals. I mean, they want to be fed every day. What's the deal with that?
Oh my god, food. The organizing of food and the providing of food takes genuinely, never mind, I mean, you know, we have stuff, you know, we order online and it comes to us, but even so, it takes so many hours a week.
It does. And I think when they're home with you all the time and they're always wanting to snack, you're always trying to come up with the next thing. So, you know, and I have seasons when I'm brilliantly organized and I'll meal plan and I'll be ahead of the game. And there are times when it'll get to 3 o'clock and I'll pull some out of the freezer. I generally have a stocked up, you know, have things in.
Yes.
and, you know, pull something together. I was taught, well, my mother is good at winging meals, so I was like, right, that'll go together. And sometimes that can just be like, you just go with it, don't you? Other times it can feel quite overwhelming. And I think transition is hard. And I have to, you know, we've been through homeschooling of having babies, moving house, you know, trauma, things going on in wider family, all that kind of stuff can happen whilst you're homeschooling. And somehow you've got to cling on and keep going. And whilst managing everything else. And I think, honestly, I would say it's not the home educating itself. It's not the kind of working with my kids. I've always felt quite confident in doing what I'm supposed to do. Yeah. It's the other stuff that can be, because I don't know if the outside world see it as a full-time job or see it as it seems to merge with kind of mum at home. And I think I've had to, people in my life have had to adjust to what that actually means. So I'll say to people, this is my job. This is my full-time job. I homeschool my kids. And it kind of helps people's mindsets then.
Well, it's a priority. It has to be your highest priority, even if you know, have a job on the side or you're doing extra stuff.
Yeah,
it's about fitting those around your main job. And I think, you know, that's hard. It takes discipline that you have to learn. You're not born with it.
No, that's right. And you have to adjust. I think it's like, and as the children get older and their needs change, especially as I haven't got toddlers and babies anymore. My youngest is 7. So life looks very different and you kind of start to stretch different parenting muscles. I think probably another thing that I would say as well is just dealing with character and discipline issues or whatever the kids are going through. If one of them has a meltdown, it can totally take out the whole day. Yeah. And you're like, okay, everything's on a standstill. So you kind of try and busy everybody while you're loving on this one child who needs some particular attention that day. Yeah. And that can be hard as well. And I've had other mums ask me about that. What do you do when one child just on one day needs more attention? And I'm like, you've just got to give it to them. You've just got to manage that. Because you are a mum first. And actually it's a privilege that you get to be there for them. They're not going through that in a school classroom. So I think some of it's perspective, isn't it? Some of it is kind of thinking about it differently, rather than seeing it as like, oh, I've spent my whole day, you know, dealing with this meltdown.
It seems to me that the thing is, it's like, if they were going to have a meltdown, you know what it's like, even if they were in school, they probably wouldn't have that meltdown in school.
No, they would
wait and have it at home.
At home. That's true.
And you would still have to deal with it. You would just deal with it at the very end of the day when everybody's tired and you're probably trying to deal with homework and you're cooking and you know what I mean? You've got X amount of time until the day is done and everyone has to go to bed.
Yeah.
It's like it might feel like it's taking a big chunk out of the day, but it's giving it more space.
It does give you more space. Yeah. And I think it gives them, you know, there's more opportunity. I know in our house, I find that there's more opportunity for them to get some quiet and just pull it together a little bit and get some perspective or even just to say, hey, let's go outside. Yeah. You know how sometimes the distraction technique works. And and I think I definitely my younger years as a younger mum and a younger home educator, they were sometimes the struggles were kind of when I was homeschooling too, then I had a toddler and a baby.
Yeah.
And figuring out what that looked like and sort of where my priorities were, but hey, I'm alive and I'm standing here to tell the tale.
This sort of segues into the next question, which is like, what have you done that have made the hard things easier?
I think I try not to use this phrase because it's overused at the moment, the whole thing about self-care. I don't know if I call it that because I think caring for yourself is part of being a human. But we seem to have obviously gone so much the opposite way that we've had to make it into this marketable thing, like, and we, you know, hashtag self-care. But actually I have prioritized knowing what I need to function properly for my mental health, my emotional health and my physical health. And some of that is one of the things I one of the ways I do that is I get up really early to be ready for the day, or just to get some time for myself. Now that I've just figured I am an introvert. I am absolutely a morning person, so both those things work well together.
Yeah.
That I try and go for a walk when it's not too dark, like it is now. Try and go for a walk, have some quiet time, just doing something for myself, reading, just reflecting, whatever it is, or even sometimes just clearing the dishes if there were some left, or getting a load of laundry on. But I try and do that as much. I mean, I pretty much do that every day before anybody else wakes up, and it kind of sets the day for me. Yeah. And that has been really good. The other thing that I do is just to read the signs when everything's a little bit too much and we just need to stop. So, you know, if I'm not feeling great, or the children aren't responding great over a period of time, or things are just getting busy outside of the home educating world, of our world, just to say, you know, tomorrow we're going to rest, or tomorrow we're going to spend the day just cleaning our bedrooms, because that's what needs to be done. And rather than getting overwhelmed, so say if it is like a domestic thing, like a housework thing, and it's building up and you're looking at it every day and just getting more and more frustrated, it's just being confident to go, you know what, we're going to take the day off and we're going to tackle this, so that it's out off the list and all our minds are better. And I think we have to look after our mental health as home educators. I think that especially coming into the darker months, when it gets very dark and cold here in the UK, we don't see the sun for a long time.
Yeah.
People get affected by it because you are in your home more. You're not doing the school run like a lot of people do. You are waking up and you're staying in the same house. So I think we have to find ways of helping ourselves, and whatever that is. Some people are crafters, some people just get outside more, some people, you know, I don't know, you know, whatever you find to do. I won't list all the self-help. Might not be appropriate, but
but it's about prioritizing that stuff, isn't it? And not just going, oh no, we've got to keep doing blah, or we've got to, you know.
No, I think you have to look after everyone, yourself included, mind, body, and soul. And I think we're so. I mean, I'm so bad at this sometimes, whereas I'll hopelessly care for everybody else, make sure everyone's fed and watered and looked after and clothed and all that kind of stuff, and some of it's my personality, and I just forget myself, you know. And again, growing a little bit older, it helps, because you realize actually I need to preserve who I am, and yeah. You know, pursuing your own interests as well, that's a really, I mean, I love photography, I love writing, some of that does tie into homeschooling and some of the stuff that I get to do, but just making sure that you're still pursuing your own interests, however small or however little amount of time you get to do that. And also, you know, discovering what your favorite hot beverage is, that's a very good skill. Is it hot chocolate, is it coffee, pots of tea, whatever it is, just keep it on the tap. Very important.
I think the thing is it's like, you know, we lead by example. And we yes. should lead by example. And that does mean, you know, our kids should see us with our face in a book. And our kids, to be honest, to not be anti-technology, our kids should look and say, what are you doing? And realise that you're not on Instagram. You're reading, you know, you're on the Kindle app on your phone.
That's right.
And it's not, I mean, like, people sort of say, oh, when you're on your phone, it just looks like you're doing whatever. But it's like our kids don't come close to us. Like, they don't come and nudge right up to us and stick their face into the phone to see what you're doing, kind of thing. They know what you're doing on your phone. So they if do. They see you on a, you know, if they see you reading, or they see you're looking up something that you're interested in, it just encourages them that, like, you know, we follow our interests, and they should, you know.
Yeah, it's important. We do lead by example. It's true. Yeah, it's a good point.
So, is there a typical life, a day in the life, even?
It changes so much, and it changed again even from September.
Yeah.
And then I've just travelled. I was just over at the Wild and Free conference in Tennessee. I was speaking there, so I go for as short as possible. So I was only actually away from my family for 4 days. But it, you know, the impact is a little bit bigger because of just travel and jet lag and all that kind of stuff. So it even adjusts again. And but generally, yes, there is a typical day, and that would be just our learning day, very much like, so we start around breakfast together, where we'd have what some people call a morning basket or morning time. And we've been doing that for 11 years. I didn't realize it had a name until, you know, it seems like, oh, we all do the same thing, which generally will, you know, whatever that looks like, us having a time of reflection together, reading a poem, reading from our read aloud. So I have a collective time. And then there's a period, then we'll do kind of, we get on with some stuff around the house, some chores, just reset everything, make beds, brush teeth, you know, the whole thing. And then there's a period of time when they get on with stuff on their own. So I call that their independent study. So that would be maths and copy work, some map work they do. I mean, they've got a list. They read a biography, just various things, part of a biography. We have this list. I kind of use loop scheduling this term. So I've started trialing that, which has been really good. So they kind of just follow this list. And then I try and do a little bit of one-on-one, whether that is whoever needs that. And then we kind of come together. I mean, generally we can get this in before. We don't eat lunch till like 1 o'clock, sometimes even later, because yes. You know, if you haven't started till late, everything shifts a bit, doesn't it?
Yeah.
But then we'll come together again when we'll do stuff like history and geography and those kind of read alouds and anything else. And then our afternoons, I mean, the week itself has pretty much a set rhythm. Monday afternoons, we try and get the house cleaned. Tuesday and Thursdays, we tend to pretty much work all day in some way, keep things going, because I don't have the car. So it makes sense to kind of be at home and just get on and tackle all our biggest goals really for the week.
Yeah.
Wednesdays, I have a nature group twice a month. So I'll have people come to our home, we'll go for a walk, and then we'll do some nature study together. And that seems to be the bit, we might do a trip on that day, we might go to the art gallery. And then Fridays, we do stuff in the morning. And then Friday, I always say Fridays are for friends. So Friday afternoon, we see friends, and Micah has a little drawing club with a friend that he goes off to. And so we've got a rhythm to the week and then a rhythm to our days, whichever day it is. And that really is kind of, some of the things that we do have been part of our routine for years and years, and then they just get tweaked and adjusted with however old the children are.
Yeah.
And then I just try, and I try new things. I mean, I used to kind of timetable, but then I would also do that planning from behind as well. I'd have a rough idea of what I wanted to do, but at the end of the day, I'd jot down what we actually did do. And I'm okay with that. I'm quite, you know, I think there's freedom within format. So I try and format some kind of plan, but I'm happy. I don't beat myself up if I don't stick to it. So, you know, and, you know, if somebody goes, can we bake today? I'm like, yeah, let's do it. That's maths.
Yeah, exactly.
And we get to eat it. So, so we started our morning today with making flapjack, you know, and we'll probably go for a walk this afternoon, and it's just great really. So, and there are some days where you just, you know, your heads are down all day and you kind of creating, or you're writing and reading. And I think I do get to sometimes get to Thursday night and I'll reflect on the week and think, yeah, there's a couple of things that I wish we'd achieved. So Friday morning, that's what we do.
Yeah.
And you know, just think, let's just make sure this is understood, this concept, or I feel like this is a struggle, let's work on that. And try and wrap that up Friday morning, and then we're done. But then, you know, then some weeks don't look anything like that. Totally different. But it's all good. I think the longer you do it, the more confident you are in understanding that children learn no matter what's going on. They learn. They're always learning. So just this morning I paused. I can't remember what I was doing. I was doing something. I had to do a quick job on the computer. So I said, right, have 10 minutes, just go and have a little. And the next thing I knew, they'd got the tape measure from the cupboard and the pencil, and they were measuring, seeing how tall Sienna was, and then, you know, saying to me, do I do it in centimetres or inches? And they were doing their own little bit of maths upstairs. I was like, this is brilliant. I need to write it down. And that, you know, totally self-led and motivated by them, nothing to do with me. And that's what happens, isn't it? All the time you find them doing stuff that actually are just brilliant learning opportunities that have just been initiated by them. I love those moments.
I love those because it's just, you just get to see them be wholly themselves.
Absolutely.
You're not leading it. They're just, you know, they've taken themselves off and done a thing. And you're like, I never would have thought of that.
I know,
not like that. And it's just, it's lovely.
So good.
So what's going on for home educators in your area?
So we have a group, a large group, which is actually, so let me think of it. It's called Christian Home Educators Warwickshire. It's CHEW, which is very big, and it's grown over, I was part of it right at the beginning, probably 8-9 years ago. That they run something most Tuesdays, which happens to be a day when I don't have the car. So unfortunately, in this season of life, I haven't been able to get involved with that group, but it's run by a friend of mine, Julia English, who some people will know who are listening to this. She's fabulous and such a great example, an entrepreneur really in the field of kind of wanting to keep moving things forward for home educators in this area. And she has a group of a great team of people, and they put on like a co-op style thing where everyone gets involved and the other mums help. They do trips, they do pretty much, you know, if they don't do it themselves, she signposts to other stuff that's going on. So that's a really good group. There are also, I mean, there's, you know, I'm in this kind of Midlands area, there's lots of groups wider. I think there are different groups for different reasons as well. So you'll have drama things going on. And then I run a twice a month, a nature group, which before people start messaging me, it is a very small group and it is closed right now.
Watch this
space. I may open up other slots or other opportunities, but I live on a park. I've only been living here about a year and a half. So I live literally, there's a hedge between us and the park, and it's amazing. So, and we've got woods and a river and all sorts of stuff. So I tend to host it here because we can walk here, and then I we do some stuff back at my house afterwards. But that's great. But there is a very wonderful, growing, thriving group of home educators in the Coventry and Warwickshire area, which I'm so grateful for. And even if I don't personally get to access everything they're doing, the support is online anytime I want it.
Yeah.
I know who the people are to go to. I've got, you know, a handful really of good family friends who we do stuff together. So there's no reason to be lonely if you're living around here. I'm so grateful for what people have pioneered and formed. It's great. Really good.
Excellent. So do you have any resource recommendation for other home ed parents?
I think depending on where you are, what you're focusing on, what your convictions are around how children should be educated, I think definitely do your homework, do your research. I mean, my particular area of interest is the Charlotte Mason philosophy, and her methods. And the things that have helped me, in things that are sort of the closest to how I see and view that philosophy, would be simply Charlotte Mason. I think she's great. She has some great stuff. It's all online, and some of the stuff is hard. It's not all online, actually. I say it's all online. You can look for it online.
Yeah.
She does sell a lot of books and helpful things, which are quite difficult to have shipped over here. But she offers PDF downloads. So I'll often get stuff from there. So that's, she's great. I love any of Julie Bogart's stuff. So the Brave Writer stuff that she has, again, which is generally offered from a PDF. I think you can get that easily here. But I love what she stands for. I love what she talks about. I get to meet her next February in Dallas, which I'm so excited about.
Oh, that sounds fantastic.
It's the same conference, so can't wait to meet her in person. In fact, her and I did a podcast a little while ago, so we got to chat, which was great. And I just love anything she does. I think she keeps it all, you know, she is all about encouraging, bringing the writer out in your child. So if you're interested in that, then go and check out Julie. I think her stuff is great. And I also highly recommend anything to do with Wild and Free. It's actually available worldwide. And the cool thing is, if you sign up with them, if you subscribe to Wild and Free, so it's like a monthly downloadable bundle. It's a digital bundle.
Yeah.
They send out a print sampler, which no matter where you are in the world, it doesn't cost any more. So that's great. So if you're in America,
that's crazy. I remember I'm not a member at the moment, but I have been in the past. Yeah. And you get this thing through the mail. You're like, what on earth is? And it's such good quality.
It's so good quality.
And it's like, usually you just can't get stuff because it would be like, oh, well, the shipping's $20. So like, you know what I mean? And you go, no, maybe not. And this thing just turns up because you remember. It's amazing.
It's great. And it reminds you to go and download the bundle.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, you were.
So it literally is. The people are like, I mean, some people think, is that it? And no, that's just a sample.
Yeah.
And the digital bundle is huge. I mean, you get podcasts on there. And you also, if you're a member, you get to go on to the member site and listen to all the conference talks and from all the years. So I think it's definitely worthwhile signing up with them. I think it's wonderful resources. And it just is, it's just quality. I know Ainsley very well, and she puts so much work into what she produces. So I definitely recommend that. It's not, you know, it's not a curriculum, it's not a way of doing things, it's very much inspiration. So if you just need some encouragement and inspiration, there are some kind of tutorials around handicrafts and things like that, but it's generally just kind of keeping you going, which is what we all need, I think.
Oh god, well it seems like such a uplifting community. Do you know what I mean? Like it really is about supporting home ed parents and homeschooling parents. And it's just,
being a champion, somebody in your corner saying, you've got this, you're doing a great job.
Yeah.
And they definitely do that well. And just being there in person, being at the conferences. And, you know, obviously I am constantly dropping hints saying, come to Europe. Watch the space, guys. We'll see. Hey. that would be so fun.
Yeah, totally. Do you have any book recs for kids and read alouds, etc.?
Oh gosh, loads.
It's dangerous. It's like, how do I narrow it down?
I know. So okay, good cross section of stuff. We read everything from Roald Dahl and E.B. White through to Unstead's history book, so we do all sorts. One lovely book, I'm just wheeling across my little library, one lovely book that we've just read is called River Song by Alison Morgan, and it's, if you're nature lovers, you will like this one. It's beautiful, and it's a total living book, so it's written in narrative story form about and it's English, it's about a pied wagtail. It's, so the birds have all got, you know, they're kind of human characteristics, how people feel about that, but we think it's cute. And it's just a really, really good story. My kids were like, you know, when they go, another chapter, and you try to just do one a day. We loved it. So it's called River Song. So we recently finished that one. We just actually also finished Charlie and the Chocolate Factory. I couldn't believe it. So most of my kids have read that on their own, but I've never done it as a read aloud, which was great, apart from when you get to the Oompa Loompa songs, which I just skip over.
Like, did you not do them? Did you not perform them?
And then I was like, guys, these are just like repetitive and really weird. Do I really have to do this? They were like, yeah. Because, you know, like, I'm the mum who does all the voices. Mm-hmm. And then I forget what that voice was. So I change the voice. Hang on. That's good. We've loved that one. We recently read Indian in the Cupboard. Off the top of my head, I can't remember the title. The author, but I'm sure listeners will be like shouting it at the podcast now.
I will stick it in the show notes. It's fine.
Yeah, Indian in the Cupboard was really good. My kids loved that one. Found that really interesting. We do like audiobooks as well. So Sienna, my youngest, she's listening to Caddy Woodlawn at the moment, which is based in Wisconsin in America. And it's got, I don't want to use unpolitical terms, but it has an American Indian That's how you say it. I'm trying to use the right terms, but I think it's the American Indian, and it's about the kind of West, the Wild West back then. So she's finding that interesting. Mm-hmm. And the other thing we've recently listened to on, there's a podcast called The Same Page by Mackenzie Kerr. So Mackenzie, she's a friend of mine. She's doing some brilliant stuff. She's recording that. Yeah, it's quite a new podcast. It's The Same Page. And she's just recorded the whole of The Wizard of Oz. So you can listen to that for free. She does like a chapter a day. And she's finished that. So we just listened to that and absolutely loved it. And she's about to record Peter Pan.
Oh, brilliant.
So if you want a day off reading aloud, your voice needs a rest. There's some great, and just not everyone can afford audiobooks because it can get expensive if you've not got a big budget. You know. So there are things, I know there's LibriVox, but my kids don't always like the voices. They're always like, oh my goodness, they're so fussy about voices. I'm like, woohoo, all these free books. And they're like, we don't like this. I'm like, okay. So The Same Page podcast, my kids love her voice and she does all the voices and she even does a great British accent. I've told her. She's like, I'm like, good, this is good. So that's good. I'll recommend that. Yeah, there's a few there for you.
That's fantastic. Where can people find you online?
So Leah Bowden generally everywhere. So leahbowden.com, Leah V. Bowden on Instagram, middle named it there. Anything, just type in Leah Bowden, you'll find all my stuff all over the place. But if you go to leahbowden.com, that will link to everything else that I do. But I also have a little side gig called Modern Miss Mason, which is slowly kind of developing into something, but it's great. And that is really where I totally focus on the Charlotte Mason philosophy in home education. So again, if somebody types into anything, that's on Instagram, that is on Facebook, and even modernmissmason.com will take you to my website, so it all goes to the same thing. Mm-hmm. But that's where you'll find me.
And you have courses?
Yeah, so I do. Yeah, so the book is nothing to do with home education, although I may have mentioned it, but the book is to do with motherhood, which I want to write a book before I'm 40. So I did. Basically, it's a collection of essays, kind of reflections on motherhood. And my whole purpose was that somebody could sit down and read one whilst drinking a cup of tea. And that's, you know, they could just leave it for a few days. And so they are individual pieces, just reflections, really. Yeah. And that's available on my as an ebook on my website, so people can find that there. But yeah, so the courses that I do are to help people find their freedom in the Charlotte Mason philosophy, and they're all based on Facebook. So all you need is a Facebook account. Some people have a real love-hate relationship with Facebook, I know, but I've said to some people, even if you set up an account and only do the courses, you don't have to be friends, you know, you don't have to do anything else. It's worth it, because I've set them up as being like super affordable, and I do sales all the time. And what they are, they're video based with downloadable things as well. And I've got four on there at the moment. So one is to do with narration, one is to do with planning your own kind of Charlotte Mason way of curriculum, Charlotte crafting your own curriculum. That's called Plan for Freedom. I've got one on nature study, which also features my good friend Lynn Seddon on there as well. And then I've got one called Back to Basics, which really helps people understand what Charlotte Mason meant about atmosphere, discipline, life. So they are all you've got to do. Again, all the details are on leahbowden.com. Go over there and you just book on. And you can start them straight away, and you can take as long as you want over them. I mean, I have some people who'll buy it and then they'll do it like a year later, and it's no big deal. It just stays there. Just sits there. So, they're dead easy to use. And the most popular one has been the Plan for Freedom one, actually. That's the one that people have gone, oh, I can do this, which has been interesting, because you never know what kind of reaction you're going to get. So, yes, but come on over and have a look around, see what you think, people.
I will put all of the information to the courses and everything and the books in the show notes. Not a problem at all. Thank you very much for being on the podcast. I really appreciate it.
It's been amazing. I hope it's been helpful for people hearing us chat.
I think it will be. Good. Thank you very much. Okay.
No problem. Bye.
And there you go.
If you want to find out more about any of the things we talk about in this episode, or to leave a comment, please go to the show notes on the blog at learninginanoxfordkitchen.co.uk and click on the link to Home Ed Voices Podcast, or follow the link on Instagram at Home Ed Voices Podcast, or Twitter at Home Ed Voices. This is episode 10. If you want to support the show, please rate and review at Apple Podcast, as it helps more people to find out about it. The Home Ed Voices podcast is an independent production and is created, hosted and produced by me, Katie Hanrot. The podcast theme tune is Hope for Tomorrow by C-Stock. You can subscribe to the podcast at Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Stitcher or anywhere else where podcasts are found. I'll be back with episode 11 in 2 weeks, and until then, here's to more Home Ed adventures.